Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast, a conversation that changes the way you view all relationships, whether married, single, parent, or professional. Discover the relationship secret hidden in plain sight. And now the intersection of theology and psychology. Conversations between pastor
and psychologist.
They are father and son. Your hosts, Emerson and Jonathan Egerich.
Are you ready?
Here we go.
Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast. I'm Jonathan Egerich, as always joined here by my father, Emerson Egerich, as we wind out 2015. Another year is over. This is episode 76, titled Three Reasons Some Do Not Have a Filter on Their Words. Three Reasons Some Do Not Have a Filter on Their Words. If you didn't get a chance to check out last week's episode, just again a reminder, that was episode 75, Are You Offended by the Inoffensive Person? Are You Offended by the Inoffensive Person? Thank you for those of you that gave us great feedback on that, and for those of you that listened to it and shared it with others. As always, you can get that through our app, through iTunes, on our website, a variety of places, and we're appreciative of you doing so. You know, just another reminder as we end this year and you're thinking about what you might do in the new year, I know that small groups usually start in the fall, small groups often start in the spring, but if you're considering doing that in your neighborhood, at your church, as a couple, just a reminder again, we have four small group offerings that you can purchase on our website, as well as all the smaller digital offerings that are perfect for individual, couple, and group studies as well on specific topics. So if you haven't had a chance to check those out, please do so. But without further ado, as we wind out the last couple of episodes, and technically maybe this is the last episode of the year, as when the next one will be released, we'll record it before the end of the new year, but it will be, I think, kind of released maybe on New Year's Day. So it'll be 2016 then. So the last episode of the year, Dad, and take it away here. Three reasons some do not have a filter on their words.
Well, you know, we talk about filters, and I was thinking of the oil filter that we use on our cars, and, you know, we don't always pay attention perhaps exactly, you know, what that filter does, but if we stopped and thought about it, you know, you got that oil that goes through the oil filter, but the filter itself is designed in some ways to, you know, remove, you know, the unwanted material. It kind of, it's a, you know, a porous device of some sort that removes those impurities. And I was thinking that way of analogy, you know, some of us need to have kind of a filter on the things we say, because we end up, you know, communicating information that, you know, really isn't the purest. And I want to kind of address that today in our podcast, because I think it's a helpful thing that I'm going to talk about today in terms of a little filter that I try to use myself. None of us do it perfectly, but this has helped me immensely on before I hit sin, so to speak, before I speak, before I say something to someone personally, before I say something in writing, you know, before I say something on the phone, you know, there are three questions that I ask myself or try to remind myself to ask that serves as a filter. And it's important because it prevents me from saying something that's stupid, you know, that's going to hurt people. And I want to address that today. Does that sound like a fair introduction, Jonathan?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm interested in hearing what those three things are that we might all think of before we communicate something to somebody else.
Well, I forgot what they are, so maybe we need to just close right now. And no, I think Socrates said it, and I did not come up with these. You know, centuries ago, he made the point that we ought to ask ourselves, in effect, before we speak, is it true, is it kind, and is it necessary? There it is. Is that which I'm about to say going to be true? Is that which I'm about to write going to be kind? Is that which I'm about to, you know, communicate to somebody over the phone going to be necessary? And I remember when I first heard that, I was back in college. I don't remember the speaker. I don't remember their face. I don't remember their name. And I didn't know that he was quoting Socrates at the time. But when I heard that, there are certain statements you hear over your lifetime that just stick. You didn't try to memorize it. You didn't say, oh, what were those three? It's just kind of, you heard it once and it stuck. And when I heard, hey, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? It's like a light bulb came on, because it really captures the essence of communication. I mean, we ought to speak necessary truth in a kind way. I mean, the Bible talks about speaking the truth in love. That's one of those, you know, phrases and verses that people, quote often. Hey, we ought to speak the truth in love. And Paul talks about that in Ephesians. And most of us know Ecclesiastes. You know, there's a time to speak and a time not to speak. And we all kind of have instinctively this recognition that sometimes things are left better unsaid. You know, we all kind of know that. Or Thumper, you know, if you can't say anything nice, you know, don't say anything at all. But when you start putting it together, just from a practical standpoint, from a biblical standpoint, you can't really improve on the idea that, hey, you know, the basis of communication is speaking truth that's necessary in a kind way. And, you know, because if you don't speak it in a kind way, but what you say is true and even necessary, as we've said, you can be wrong at the top of your voice. You know, you're screaming at somebody in a very unloving, disrespectful way. Even what you say is true and they need to hear it, you know. And certainly we shouldn't be speaking lies. But what we're going to do today in this podcast, I want to give some examples on this idea of communicating with this filter in our brain somewhere, so that we don't end up saying things that end up making things far worse than they should have been. And that's kind of where I want to go with this. And as I think about, you know, the various groups, I kind of categorize them, you know, in three groups. You've got your family and friends. These would be individuals that, you know, you're a little bit closer to. And then I kind of thought, you know, we kind of have our coworkers and our neighbors. You know, it's a different level of friendship, we might say. And then you have, you know, your acquaintances and strangers. I think that's kind of a, you know, a simple way of putting the groups that we would be speaking to. And then I thought, you know, but they're, not to get too complex here, but, you know, we communicate to people in writing, you know, typically today it's emails. We communicate over the phone, and we communicate face-to-face in person. And so what we're going to say today actually applies across the board. It doesn't make any difference if you're talking to family and friends, to a coworker, neighbor, to an acquaintance, a stranger. It doesn't make any difference if you are, you know, writing them, you're talking to them on the phone, or, you know, in person. And then to make this even more complex, I mean, typically we know there are informational items, there are persuasive communications, and then it's what I call affecting the affections. There's more of the emotional. You know, you inform people of information. They need to know it in their brain. You know, we try to persuade people to change their will. You know, it's the sales pitch. It's the, you know, trying to get them to do something, trying to influence them. And then you have the love note or something. You're just trying to affect people's emotions, trying to encourage the discouraged or whatever. You know, the mind, the will, the emotions. And we know very well in communication that there are different reasons that we might communicate, to inform, to persuade, or to affect, as I say. So that is the backdrop. I hope I haven't confused my audience, but I say all of that to point out that if you ask the question, is this true, is it necessary, is kind, that applies across the board, no matter who you're talking to, no matter why you're talking to them. Did I make something clear, very unclear there, Jonathan? Or was that a fair way of setting the stage to make the point that this isn't something that just applies sometimes? It applies all the time.
No, I think it's clear. I mean, we're going to move through these fast-paced, and you covered multiple categories, but we're going to hit them a little bit more in depth here with some examples. I know you sent me over these, you know, stories, and I can read them and have, you know, you respond to them appropriately. But I'm tracking, but also interested in hearing, you know, how we get a little bit more depth into each of these, you know, over the next 15 to 20 minutes.
Right. Well, and Jesus said in Matthew 12:36, but I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they will give an account for it in the day of judgment. You know, and I've read that many times, and I think, Lord, you know, this is pretty heavy. I mean, you're saying to me that careless, empty, useless words, you know, my Heavenly Father is aware of that. So this is no small issue. And many of us get ourselves in trouble not so much by what we say at a certain point. I mean, we speak what's true. We even speak what's necessary. We speak what is kind. But then there comes a moment when we go a little bit overboard. And I want to give these examples today to show the add-on. It's not really an upgrade. It ends up being a downgrade. And up to a certain point, everything was okay. And then we have this way of adding stuff that gets us in trouble. And that's the point I want to make today about it, that we end up saying something that's untrue, that's unkind and unnecessary. And maybe you could read this first one. I want to ask the question, how do you evaluate this FYI email to Bob, who's a family member? You want to read that story? I mean, or read the email. It's from Sandy.
Bob, this is Sandy. Thanks for your question about Christmas gifts. For the Christmas gift list, we drew Aunt Lizzie for you when we picked the names from a hat. This year, we are spending $100 on each family member. I am sure she'll enjoy anything you give to you since she adores you. You cannot miss with her since she thinks you are the cat's meow. However, between you and me, she lives up to her name, Two-Ton Lizzie. I don't recommend trying to get her any clothing unless you are looking for tarps. Just kidding. Have a great Christmas, Bob, and I look forward to seeing you. Thanks, Sandy.
Okay, so here she's trying to be silly, and all of us would raise our hand and confess guilt to that. We say these things, but I'm just going to say this is not the better part of wisdom. I mean, I was doing research and realizing how many people accidentally hit reply all, and it ends up going to Aunt Lizzie. Or, you know, once you put something in writing, it's out there. You can't delete that from the internet. It's out there. And what's interesting, she started out well. I mean, Sandy's a great gal. But I mean, what if Aunt Lizzie heard that? So again, everything she said up to a certain part was an informational item. It was true. It was kind of said as necessary. And then she turned the corner, and it's the add-on that we want to remind all of us. It's just not worth it. There's just no just cause to say those kinds of things, even to get a little chuckle with Bob. It's just not worth it. Is that sound reasonable, Jonathan? Do you think I'm being too harsh on Sandy?
No. I mean, I think it's a reminder to all of us that even in our most intimate of interactions with people that, you know, we trust implicitly, technology or otherwise, can be unfiltered to the rest of the world. And yet that isn't maybe the biggest concern. The biggest, you know, concern is, you know, why are we putting that information in there in the first place?
Yes. Okay. Here's another example. How do you evaluate this phone call addressing a coworker's feelings?
Hi, Jackie. Arnold here. I hope you get this voice message today. I feel badly that you did not receive the promotion. Several in the office reported to me that your supervisor declined to advance you. That's a bummer. I hurt for you and wanted you to know. At the same time, I am hopeful that something unexpectedly good comes from this. Though I have always received my promotions, I did so because I had good bosses, unlike in your situation with Craig, who in my opinion is an idiot. The guy is a pain, and everybody knows it. He treats people unfairly. I mean, maybe you didn't deserve the promotion. I don't know, but I predict Craig's incompetence is behind this. Let me know if there is anything I can do for you.
Okay, so up to a certain point, he's, you know, empathetic, you know, reaching out, but obviously we see where he turned the corner. I mean, up to that point, it was a great voice message being left, but then when he calls, you know, Craig Canfield an idiot, you know, that's not necessary. It's not kind. And then, you know, what's the deal, you know, talking about his own promotion? I mean, that, and then, you know, and then making that comment, maybe you didn't deserve the promotion. I don't know. I mean, so you can be honest, but sometimes things just aren't, you know, necessary. I mean, you know, so we have to remind ourselves in these correspondences, or in this case, the voice message, hey, am I adding on something here that just isn't going to be healthy for me, for really anybody involved? And I've got to temper what I'm saying. I mean, calling another person an idiot, you know, is simply going to come back to bite us. Let me ask this another question. How do you evaluate this persuasive communication face-to-face with a stranger?
She hurries the process so David can get to the police station in time. As he is about to leave the office, David says, "You are so much nicer than your coworker who told me over the phone, 'No, not today, in light of your time crunch. We cannot get this done, but can help you tomorrow.' So many government workers have a cannot do attitude." The clerk responds, "Well, that would be Sally, to whom you refer, and her mother died this week, so she has been distracted. I hope you understand. She is probably the best worker in this office, helping people with their emergencies more than I do."
Well, David stepped into that one. I mean, and what's so interesting is up to that point, he was using his persuasion. He was, being self-deprecating, saying, "Hey, this is my problem. If you can't help me, understand." He was extremely winsome. He was empathetic toward, the rush that he was placing this clerk on. But then he couldn't just stop right there. He had to make some comment. He was probably irritated by, the comment that was made to him over the phone, "No, don't come in today." And he didn't want to hear that. And so now he unloads, and only to find out how, utterly stupid this was. And then, and it's what we say, what goes around comes around. Next Sunday, he's sitting in church, and here that female clerk that helped him is sitting right next to him, and he comes to find out it's the pastor's sister. Well, David can kiss the opportunity to be elected to the deacon board. He can kiss that goodbye. What goes around comes around, and there are consequences we pay. And even though we think, this is a stranger, I'm never going to see them again, I mean, that doesn't mean this isn't going to come back to bite you. But even more so, our Heavenly Father is listening to every careless word, and David should have known that this is just unnecessary. Why do I need to say this? What is it that is in some of us that compels us? Up to a certain point, we're doing so beautifully, we're so wise, we're so prudent, and then the wheels fall off because we can't keep our mouth shut.
Well, I mean, I think there are all these examples, including this one, of where we cancel the right we did with the wrong we immediately followed up with, right? Whether these examples are, saying something to our spouse, I appreciate that you took the trash out, but you're ticking me off by, fill in the blank, what you did. I mean, is this the moment, to do it, right? I mean, we've just expressed appreciation to somehow, soften the blow, that's coming, right? Or we praise this person that we run into, not knowing that they're the boss, and we say, "Boy, you're not like all the other idiots in this company, right?" And it's their company, right? I mean, so we do these things, correctly and wrongly at the same time, and yet the wrong always cancels out the correct.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, it really does make all these wonderful deposits, but then the withdrawal, maybe same number of words, but the withdrawal is always bigger than the deposit. The negative tends to, counter the positive. Because what it does is we don't believe the negative. Put it this way, we don't discount the negative in light of the positive. We tend to discount the positive in light of the negative. We conclude generally that the negative reveals the true person. Yep. The true soul comes out through the negative. And that's why it undermines the positive. And I think you're referencing what we call the sandwich approach, which if you're going to deal with somebody, you start positively, then you give them the riot act, and then you counter with, something nice. And it's always the but, "Hey, Joe, it's been wonderful to see you," et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there comes the but. Now we dump on them, and now we come back with the wonderful whatever. And in some ways, you can't avoid that. But again, it's one of those things where we have to ask ourselves, is this the time? Is this the place? Is it necessary? Is it true? Is it going to come across kind? And we sometimes have to confront. And there's nothing wrong with being gracious up front and then gracious at the end, and then let the truth carry its own weight. We have to do that. But we also recognize that people tend not to, pay much attention to the niceties up front and at the end, particularly if we were cruel in between.
Well, and not that this is exactly on this topic, but in a related sense, I mean, I remember reading somewhere that, electronic communication today, whether emails, texts, et cetera, a positive, sounding message is interpreted as neutral. A neutral, message that was intended is interpreted as negative, and a negative message is interpreted, worse than that. So, I mean, it's very, difficult, to communicate some of this stuff in a positive fashion when it's automatically being read or filtered through a grid one level down from where it was intended.
Well, that's an excellent insight as well, because people tend to read between the lines. They lean toward the negative. So as you point out, if it's just a neutral thing, people may think the individual has an attitude or they're really saying something quite negative. And that's why emoticons are such a huge component in emails today, because we're trying to let the reader know, because we're not perhaps confident in our own ability to say things in such a way that our meanings are clear, that we then put the happy face or whatever just to reassure the reader that we have a light spirit or we're happy or we're joking or whatever. And but, you know, my challenge is let's not emoticon ourselves through life. We can't icon ourselves all the way through life. We've got to be able to speak wisely over the phone as well as in person, because you can't just hold up a little sign of a happy face when you're talking on the phone, because then tones are so important. And then eye and nonverbal expressions, you know, interpersonally, there's so much to this that goes along with even before saying, is this true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? There's so much in communication, and it, and we don't have to be overwhelmed by this. And I don't want people to feel like, oh man, but I do think that there's a place where some of us need to make an adjustment, because what's really on our hearts, what we're really trying to do, what's really the purpose of the communication is getting sabotaged by the fact that we are not delivering it in a way that, you know, is proving positive to the individual who's listening to us.
And so I think we kind of started here given an overall framework of, you know, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? And, you know, as we hit the last half here of the podcast today, I think you mentioned three other things about, you know, the way that we communicate in terms of we may be attempting to inform somebody, maybe attempting to persuade somebody, or we may be attempting to affect, you know, somebody in terms of an emotional message or sentiment. Did you want to say more about that?
Well, I think earlier I made mention of that just briefly, that it doesn't make any difference ultimately the purpose of the communication. Is it to inform? Is it to persuade? Is it to affect their emotions, which is kind of how I say it. It regardless of the purpose of the communication, you must always ask, is this true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? And the same thing holds true whether you're talking to a family or a friend or a coworker or a neighbor or an acquaintance or a stranger. This is why it's such an exciting thing and why it's so simple. It's not simplistic, and it's something that we all have to remind ourselves of. But once we lock into that, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Wow. Does that ever, you know, help? I mean, it's a huge, huge thing. And I hope that the listener is saying, man, you know what? That's a great little rail to guide me along in some of these conversations I'm having. But I wanted to take this second half and just continue to ask some of these questions. I mean, what about this? And I want you to read this one, Jonathan. What about this persuasive conversation over the phone to a family member?
An adult son says over the phone, "Mom and Dad, my sophomore year at college is going well, but I think I will need some extra help financially." Dad replies, "Jason, we are at our limits, so can't help you any more than we have already. I feel badly, but we cannot do more at this time. I am truly sorry." Jason retorts in an enraged manner, "You helped Kelly when she was in college. You have always favored her and could care less about me." He hangs up on them.
So there's the, he's not going to be particularly persuasive.
Sounds like some of my interactions with you when I was in college. Yeah.
No, not quite. But I do think that there are these moments, and you know, we'll give, you know, kids grace, and he's a sophomore, and it's this compound word for, you know, wise fool, you know, in and out of maturity. But again, I think he illustrates, you know, hey, parents hang up, and if the parents have any discernment, are going to say, well, he revealed his true colors. I mean, this is all about him. He's not empathetic toward us. He doesn't understand our concerns. He's telling us that we're unfair, that we favor Kelly above him. I mean, the whole thing, this is why, you know, collegiates sometimes think they're, you know, so wise, and yet they have these moments that completely undermines. But we do the same thing. And it could be in an office complex. It can be with any number of settings that some of us don't get it. And we've got to just back up and say, whoa, 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 wait a minute. This is not going to prove persuasive. It's because why? Well, we're coming across in this case in a very unkind way, and we're saying things that are totally unnecessary. And I can't believe that much of what he said there at the end was even true. Mm-hmm. So what about this FYI face-to-face interaction with a coworker?
Annette, thanks for meeting with me in my office. As your supervisor, I need to tell you that we are cutting back on various positions. Unfortunately, we need to abolish your job during this season in our company and reassign your duties to others. We have to tighten the belt. We do have another option. You can relocate to another state with the company, but at a reduced salary. Between you and me, this stinks. I wish we could keep you, but there is no other way. This is the boss's idea, contrary to my desires. Several months later, it comes out among other workers, and this got back to Annette, that the boss would have kept Annette for another year, but this supervisor saw this as an opportunity to transition her out of his department. Morale in the office sunk to an all-time low.
Yeah, no wonder. I mean, people feel like if he treated Annette that way, what's he going to do with us? And this, again, is the price you pay in a leadership position. If you're going to be untruthful and give the impression that you're speaking what's true, talk about something, you know, that proves to be extremely unkind. And it's just a good reminder again that, you better get your ducks in order on this. If you go into a meeting like this and you intend to lie, and the boss finds out about this, that doesn't represent what the boss said. I mean, I think this is kind of common sense, and yet there are some people who are barging forward in life thinking they can do this kind of thing, and there's no price to pay. And again, this supervisor, and he's not the boss, the boss was going to keep Annette on for another year. But this supervisor, for whatever reason in his budgetary concerns, saw this as an opportunity to get rid of Annette and moved forth accordingly, but he did so deceptively. And again, what goes around comes around, and there are consequences to the decisions that we make when we violate the three concepts. Is this true? Is this kind? Is this necessary? And the answer was no, no, no. This was untrue. This was unkind. This was unnecessary.
What about we do one more example, Dad?
Okay. What about this email to an acquaintance related to an emotional issue?
The local cleaner at the laundry dies. Sam, a customer, writes a card of condolence to the new widow. Dear Margaret, I wanted to express my sorrow over the loss of your husband. Though I did not know him, other than our brief greetings as I entered the store, many spoke highly of his service. Though he had a few run-ins with customers over the years, surely they misjudged him. That does not reflect my experience with his wonderful treatment. Even so, we hurt with you. Our thoughts and prayers are with you. If there's anything I can do for you, please let me know.
Okay. This is the typical, if there's anything I can do for you, let me know. I mean, he doesn't even know the lady. And so that's insincere. I mean, I don't know of anybody who's ever contacted somebody, hey, you said if there was anything that you could do for me, you would. Well, I need your help right now. It doesn't go down. It's a superficial statement, not to suggest, I mean, he throws in, though he had a few run-ins with the customers over the years. I mean, again, it's unnecessary. And some of us, you know, tend to be motor mouths at times, and we just run on. And we say things that really, again, contradict the three concepts, the three questions. Is this true? Is this kind? Is this necessary?
In this instance, I'm wondering what your opinion is on, you know, some of these things are perfunctory kind of social norms, right? I mean, we all say, if there's anything I can do for you, you know, please let me know. I mean, what do you suggest in this type of instance or with, you know, things like that where we're attempting to maybe make an emotional connection with somebody, but the relationship doesn't even warrant the suggestion that one existed, nor will it, moving forward.
Yeah, well, and don't say it if you're. But I think also the answer to that question is do something. You know, you say to her, you know, we want to provide for you, you know, a gift certificate at, you know, Ruth Chris, you know, restaurant, or you know, if you want to do something for the person, then do it. Don't say you're going to do it. Do something that's within, you know, appropriateness, a gift of some sort, flowers or, some kind of benevolent gesture that helps the person, or you're going to leave, you know, money in his name with, you know, their favorite charity. But do it. Don't say you're willing to do it. Instead, do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so as we've gone through all these examples talking about are things true, kind, and necessary, as you talked about, this idea of are things, what were the three again, persuasive, informing, and affecting or affecting emotions. You know, how do you wind us up today? What's the take-home message or where do you
want to? I think a person might be saying, well, what if I blown it? Well, you have to get humble and you have to acknowledge that what you said was untrue or unkind or unnecessary. People are forgiving. We are forgiving, especially if someone's really humble about it. You know, I shouldn't have said what I said. You know, you're right, Bob, if you're Sandy, and say, you know, what I said about Aunt Lizzie was out of line. Hey, would you just forgive me that? I'm really convicted by how I was trying to be silly. and that's just wrong of me. She is one of the greatest people I know, and that was stupid of me. I don't know where my brain was. Please forgive me, and would you delete that? And I mean, people get it because Bob's made mistakes. Everybody's made mistakes. There is no person alive who speaks perfectly. No one can control the tongue perfectly. James speaks to that issue. So, you know, it's not that people are not going to extend grace. So you try to recover from it immediately by seeking forgiveness. You know what? Time out here. I just overstepped it. Would you forgive me? My spirit is upset with what I just did. I can't believe I just said that. Can we take that from the record? Can we backpedal on this and start again? Most people are most accommodating. It serves as a great example, and so on and so forth. Now, if we say things that are way, way, you know, over, I mean, where we are clearly, you know, there's a consequence to pay. I mean, you have to seek forgiveness, but there's a consequence. You know, people will forgive, but you may not be able to absolve yourself of this. You know, sometimes people get fired, and we see it in the media all over the place. I mean, there are some things with zero tolerance, and there are certain things we just cannot say, or there's a huge price to pay. And that's why it's a fitting reminder today that we've got to ask those three questions. We've got to let this be the filter to make sure that those impurities don't get out. But if we have blown it, the immediate thing is not to try to rationalize it or justify it. Just go back and seek the forgiveness of the person that we said these things inappropriately to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess those are two other questions, right? I mean, am I self-aware? Am I others aware, you know, with these three things, right? And do I have the wherewithal to ask somebody else if something felt untrue, if something felt unkind, if something felt, you know, necessary, if I sense that I've hurt somebody or I'm uncertain. And I guess one question I had for you, I mean, what about the person who, I guess in a general way, you know, says, well, what about being true to my, you know, true to myself, right? What about getting what I'm feeling, you know, out? Doesn't that count? I mean, who cares what, you know, somebody else responds? If I don't get this out and say it, then I'm hurting myself. Maybe an unfair question to ask you and put you on the spot with, but
no, it doesn't put me on the spot at all. That's one of the issues, because each of these then, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Comes under the category of, in this case, true. Is it the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God, as we say in the courts, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help you God. And just because I have feelings about something doesn't mean that that's based on facts. And so that's why we have to make sure that we don't presume, that we're not speculating here. Just because I feel offended, as we talked last week, does not mean that the other person, in fact, is offensive. So if I speak the truth that you're an offensive person, when it's due to my own immaturity and not being able to, you know, rightly decode what was really going on, and I'm, you know, judging them as unloving and disrespectful, when that has no basis in fact, it's just that I'm immature and I'm hypersensitive and I'm overreacting to what I misinterpret as some kind of a unloving or a disrespectful treatment of me, and I'm out to lunch on that. So just because I feel something doesn't mean that it's factual, doesn't mean that it in fact is true. And that's why we must always ask ourselves, is this true in the sense that, is this based in fact? Am I presuming here? And we've just got to be wise enough and honest enough. Now, and even if intuitively we're correct, but we don't have any basis in fact, you can't be going out and making accusations against somebody, as true as it may be. So one has to be very guarded in this. And there's deeper levels and layers to this that we won't get into today. But nonetheless, what you bring up is an important one. Just because I feel it's true doesn't mean that it is. And just because my feelings feel real doesn't mean that it's rooted in reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always learn something from these episodes. I trust that others have as well. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, depending on when you're listening to this in 2015 or beyond. But hopefully this message, for those of you that are listening, is meaningful. You'll share it with others who maybe could benefit from hearing it. And I'll let you add anything at the end, Dad, if you wish. But other than that, I think we've wrapped up this episode and the year 2015.
Well, I think it's a great thing over the holidays and even on into the new year. As you listen to other people, you can say to yourself, is that which they're saying to me really true? Was it kind? Was it necessary? And I think we can begin to appreciate the extent to which people just kind of blurt stuff out And it's dangerous. You know, I mean, this is not healthy. And it undermines esprit de corps in companies. It can undermine the family unit. And so it is the better part of wisdom to pay attention to it on the other side as well, because then it really causes us to call ourselves into check a little bit more when you begin to realize, wow, I just think they overstated that situation that was not said in a very kind way. And I don't think that was necessary for this moment at all. And then we think, you know what? I'm guilty of the same thing. Man, I gotta be more guarded here. So this is an exciting three concepts, and it governs almost everything we do by way of communication. And I hope the listener has been blessed by this.
Well, we appreciate, as always, you listening. We appreciate always you sharing with others. We appreciate, as always, you giving the thumbs up at loveandrespectpodcast.com to each episode. We appreciate the reviews and the comments on iTunes. As always, we are grateful to you. Thank you for a wonderful year. We will see you next week, and take care.
You've been listening to the Love and Respect Podcast. For more information and additional products, go to loveandrespect.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Join Emerson and Jonathan next week for another episode.